with two U.S. senators, Alaska has more power per capita than most other states. Now one of those senators is up for re-election and three seek the nomination to challenge him. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Get your questions ready for Dan Sullivan as we continue a series of 3-hour-long appearances by U.S. Senate candidates. Call statewide for Dan Sullivan, 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk@alaskapublic.org. We have the second of three to choose from on the Alaska Republican primary ballot today on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Attention, Alaska gardeners. Invasive weeds are a threat to landscaping, lawns, and gardens. They can spread and harm Alaska wildlife and waterways. Potted plants, hay, gravel, and soil, even clothing and vehicles can transport invasive plants to Alaska. So learn more at alaskainvasives.org. Let's protect Alaska together. Visit alaskainvasives.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Agriculture and the U.S. Forest Service. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
And as you probably know, during these shows with candidates, we open the lines right away, so you can feel free to call and talk to Dan Sullivan right now, 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-4822. That's 550-4822. Email talk@alaskapublic.org. Dan Sullivan, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hey, Steve. Great to be back.
So you've already got a morning of campaigning in.
Oh,
today.
My gosh. We're going everywhere in the last 24 hours. Just Lucky Wishbone, one of the American Legion posts, going up to the valley to give a speech at lunch, and then off to Fairbanks tonight. And a little door knocking yesterday with two of my teenage daughters. So we got a lot of energy in this campaign and having a blast.
So was this in Anchorage, the door knocking?
Yeah,
and
it was in Anchorage.
What neighborhood did you go to?
It was off Huffman. And just like I said, my girls were out there with me, and it was a lot of fun.
Did you find some households with nobody home?
We did, but you know what? Even there, you leave a note, right? Leave a little pamphlet
a little
and a note
hanger,
that says, hey, it came by, would love to hear from you. And I'd say about half weren't home. But I think even the pamphlets, I mean, literally some people said, hey, we love seeing the candidates come to our door. This is great. So I love doing it. It's a ball. We've been doing it all over. Going to do a little bit of that tonight in Fairbanks.
U.S. Senate. This is so odd, you know, because when I first met you, you were Attorney General.
Yes.
Then you became the Commissioner of Natural Resources.
Yes.
We had you on the show from that.
A lot going on there.
And I'm sure we'll get back to that. I think the first time you're running for the Senate, but the first time I've heard of you, I think, was this guy Dan Sullivan has come in to work for Sarah Palin.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't even your first time in Alaska.
Oh, no. I was married in Fairbanks. My wife's born and raised in Fairbanks, and was married in Fairbanks 20 years ago this summer. As a matter of fact, our anniversary's in about 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like a lot of Alaskans, I first moved up here when I first got off active duty in the military. So I was a Marine infantry officer and moved here 17 years ago, a little over 17 years ago, and to Fairbanks, my wife's hometown. Started a job there and importantly started a family there. So our girls, except my oldest, were born here. And my oldest, Megan, was moved here when she was 4 months old. She was born at Camp Pendleton. And, you know, we're living in Fairbanks and then Anchorage for a number of years, very involved in the community and our church and school. And I was also running a Marine recon unit, reserve unit. And when the September 11th terrorist attacks happened.
You got called up.
Yeah. So
you got called
kinda,
up what? Twice, right?
Well, I've been, recalled once for a long time. It was a year and a half, recalled active duty. And then last summer, as a DNR commissioner, I kind of got the shorter recall for sure, but I was in Afghanistan as a lieutenant colonel working for a counterinsurgency joint task force. So still doing a lot of Marine Corps stuff. I love the Marine Corps.
Wow. You know, I've had friends who chose the Marines.
Yeah.
Friends but I still know. and they found it extremely transformative.
It is. It is transformative. That's for sure.
I
love
doing
it.
I'm not sure, knowing what I know now, that I would have done this had I known.
Well, I'll tell you the one thing, Steve, that I'm most, when you talk about things in Alaska, I was one of the officers running a Marine Recon Reserve unit here for a number of years. Then I was the commanding officer of what was called an anti-terrorism unit here, all reserves. But one of the privileges of my life has been training young Alaskans to be Marines. I've been doing that for a long time, and a lot of these guys have sacrificed and served their country, particularly post 9/11 timeframe. And I'm still serving. When I got back from Afghanistan, I got selected for command of what's called a Marine Anglico unit, which is like a Marine Recon battalion, and I'm the commanding officer of 6th Anglico.
And somehow in there, you also served in the Department of State.
I did. That's right. When I left the state, and I know there's some people who are kind of criticizing that, I was doing something that I think a lot of Alaskans were doing at the time, which was post 9/11. A lot of our fellow Alaskans wanted to stop what they were doing to serve our country after it was attacked. And there was a lot of different ways to do that. Military, certainly. We got a proud tradition of that here in Alaska, of course. And then, I was asked at the end of my tour to serve as one of Condoleezza Rice's assistant secretaries of state in charge of the global economic, energy, terrorist finance, sanctions portfolio, pretty broad portfolio. And it was pretty much an honor to do that. And my wife and girls were living in Anchorage when I was in our home in Anchorage when I was recalled active duty. And then they came back to they met me in Washington and did that for about 2.5 years. Big honor. But as I say, I was still serving my fellow Alaskans. I was just doing it from different places in the world, whether it was Kabul or Baghdad or D.C. And I think most people recognize the importance of that kind of service.
1-800-478-8255 to join the conversation with Dan Sullivan, Republican running for U.S. Senate. And he's got a long history, and we could easily spend the whole program just going through it. And I'd rather not do that.
No.
I'd rather orient toward the future and what you would like to do. It is the calls are starting to come in right now.
Great.
But before we go to Jed from Anchorage's call, I want to just say, okay, you have this history, military history. You have history in the State Department. You obviously have like very patriotic feelings. You've been into resource development, and you also passed through a rural affairs area of specialty. All this background now goes rolling into the U.S. Senate, you hope.
Yes.
All right. So you walk in the door of the U.S. Senate, and give me three things that you would be really important to you to get done.
Well,
and when I say get done, I mean it could just be a gesture. Say, I'm going to sponsor a bill that does so-and-so, even though if you knew it would go nowhere, but you just felt as necessary to do that, or something, look for a certain community, committee assignment, whatever you think are the three top things or the reasons you want to go to Washington.
So three of the things. I'm a very optimistic guy. I see opportunity everywhere in our state, in our country, but a big reason I threw my hat in the ring was because I think the country's fundamentally been going in the wrong direction. The more I campaign, the more I think Alaskans, all walks of life, agree with that. So from my perspective, three very important things as a U.S. senator that I think would be very broadly accepted in Alaska that I would be focused on is, first, rolling back what I call the federal government's overreach. And, there's a lot of talk about that in Alaska. But, Steve, the more I get out to meet with people throughout the state, that issue frustrates Alaskans everywhere. It's not just resource development. It is small businesses. It is tourism. It is the financial sector. It is an issue. It is hunting. It is everywhere. And to me, putting a freeze on government regulations and reining in the federal government's desire to regulate all aspects of our lives and economy would be number one. Number two, related to this, is this huge opportunity we have to unleash our economic and energy power. You know, America right now, like parts of Alaska, is going through really a renaissance in terms of energy production. We are now the number one producer of oil in the world, bigger than Saudi Arabia. That's kind of amazing when you think about it. The number one producer of natural gas in the world, bigger than Russia. Number one producer of renewables in the world. And to me, this is an enormous opportunity, not only energy, but all natural resources. And I think Alaska needs to be leading the charge, which is such a great opportunity for our state and our country. And I have a number of policies that I would propose to do that. We've been successful here in Cook Inlet. I think we're seeing a turnaround on the North Slope. I'd love to talk about that because I have a strong record of getting that done with the governor. In the third area, which is a little bit different, but it's very much been a focus of my campaign when I talk about protecting Alaskans, particularly the most vulnerable. And, you know, one of probably my proudest role in my public life has been working, again, closely with Governor Parnell to spearhead the Choose Respect campaign. You know, we have a big problem with domestic violence here in Alaska. And also an issue that I've, you know, it's not often you think of them as the most vulnerable, but an issue that's very near and dear to my heart that we have to do a much, much better job with regard to the federal government is taking care of our vets. You know, we have the highest per capita population of vets in the country, 77,000 strong. They've served their country well. I'm a limited government guy, but the federal government needs to be doing a much better job at taking care of our veterans, and my campaign's been focused on that since the day I launched it, and I'm glad there's finally some attention on this really important issue.
Well, vets are kind of, they're probably a really important part of your base, I would think.
Well, we were out last night just at one of the American Legion posts and meeting with a whole host of veterans. You know, it's a huge honor, like I said, to have the support of Alaska's veterans, and we got a huge support in that regard. And I think they recognize when someone feels it in their heart. And like I said, you know, we put out my campaign's first policy paper was called the Promises Delivered Project. We put it out on Veterans Day in November. I went on talk radio. I wrote op-eds about it, pounding the table, saying we are not doing a good job of taking care of our vets. And you know, we're trying to draw some attention to all the problems. And finally, thankfully, in my view, the national media woke up to this. And there is a lot of attention on it. But I've been pounding the drum on taking care of our veterans since the day I launched this campaign. And as Alaska's U.S. Senator, I will be very focused on that.
Well, I've been watching it because so many people were coming back from deployment. I talked to people who went over as medics. To talk to them when they came back. They talked to me, the kind of stuff that they were seeing. Then we started seeing the people coming back. We started seeing post-traumatic stress.
Oh,
we
yeah.
saw suicides, even people in active duty. And we saw, like, just not enough taking care of people. And I would say we see still really slow rolling on any kind of disability claim. And so what we got is we got kind of an expose of the hapless bureaucrats trying to cover their butts for not being able to perform in this, but they need the resources to perform, Dan.
Well, they need the resources, but they also need to be, as you mentioned, Steve, incentivized with regard to how they're doing their job. Look, I think one thing, and this is really important, the vast majority of the people who work at the VA are great Americans. They want to serve their vets. What I thought, and what I still think, is the problem is the leadership at the top. There has to be serious accountability in reform. But I'll mention something else, Steve, and this is one of the reasons why still serving, to me, is so important. You know, I was doing training with my Marines in December. One of my Marines mentioned to me, hey, sir, did you see this budget deal that Congress just passed? This was the December budget deal. And I said, well, I'd heard about it. He goes, do you know that the only federal workers in the entire federal government who are taking a serious haircut in terms of their retirement are the vets? And to be honest, I didn't know that. I heard it directly from the ground truth of some of my troops. Came back home, and sure enough, he was right. And the veterans, current guys who are serving, this guy had done 19 years in, getting ready to retire, was going to take an $80,000 to $100,000 retirement pay cut over 20 years. No other federal worker was asked to sacrifice like that. And I thought it was outrageous. Mark Begich voted for that budget deal. We started really beating the drum on that, saying, look, we had a huge budget deficit. We need to tackle it. There's a whole host of ways to do it. But as I put in that policy paper that we rolled out on Veterans Day, the budget deficit should not be closed on the backs of our vets. And that happened in December. They rescinded that finally after tons of pressure. But that's another reason why, you know, serving still, which I love doing, it's you hear the ground truth from the guys.
Dan Sullivan is our guest, and we'll start with the calls now. Jed joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dan Sullivan, Jed.
Hello.
Hello, Jed.
Morning, Jed.
Yeah. Yes. My question is as follows. Congress as a body currently has an approval rating of about 7%. The American people are tired of politicians who don't work together with each other, and they're tired of politicians who lie. And so my question to Mr. Sullivan, I've noticed that your campaign ads appear to be dishonest, whether it's saying that Mead Treadwell is pro-Putin or attacking Mark Begich, who happens to be a lifelong member of the NRA, as being anti-gun. How do you think that you are going to increase people's approval rating of Congress when your campaign is fundamentally dishonest?
Well, Jed, I would disagree that my campaign's fundamentally dishonest, so maybe we can just disagree there. We've been running a very positive campaign. We've been running a campaign based on optimism, based on the fact that with the right policies, our best days in Alaska and America are ahead of us. So the other thing I've been doing is trying to unite Republicans. You don't see me... I have not been the one. Look at over the last several months. I'm trying to bring the party together to beat Mark Begich in November, not attack my fellow Republicans or do whisper campaigns or things of that nature. We're focused on the big issues. So I just would be respectfully disagreeing with you. In terms of your issue of working together, you know, I have a strong record as your attorney general, as your DNR commissioner, on getting things done. And when you get things done, that means you're working together with different groups that don't always see eye to eye with you. But if you can work to get together and make things happen, whether it's the Cook Inlet turnaround that's happening right now, I'd love to go into details on how we did that, whether it's the gas line in Point Thompson, you know, that was a multi-billion-dollar project that I led the efforts in terms of resolving that, permitting it, and getting it done. 1,200 Alaskans working on that the last two winters. Or even on SB 21. Governor asked me to lead the efforts on that. We got it through the legislature. I think it's working. Those are all examples of working together and, very importantly, getting things done. And I think that's the difference between me and the other candidates. A lot of talk out there, a lot of bills, a lot of press releases, a lot of going to conferences, and not much action. And I'm the candidate about action and getting things done.
I have a feeling you don't quite agree, Jed.
Mr. Sullivan just lied to us because he just claimed that he is not attacking his opponents. And I think he deserves to apologize to Mead Treadwell in particular for saying that Mead Treadwell is pro-Putin. So, you know, you can't have it both ways. Either you're telling the truth or you're telling a lie. And I think Mr. Sullivan has a fundamental problem with honesty. Thank you.
So, Jed, just, you know, my whole career in public service in the Marine Corps has been about honesty, integrity, and that's how I will serve as a U.S. senator. And so I think we'll just continue to fundamentally disagree on where you see that issue with me. But I'll continue to work together with Alaskans and others to get things done. And that's my record, and it's a record that's strong, and it's a record that I'm running on.
Down to Southeast now. Our guest is Dan Sullivan, running for U.S. Senate. There are three Republicans running for U.S. Senate, and he's the second of the three that we've had in the studio. We had Meade Treadwell previously. We'll have Joe Miller next week. And Jack joins the program from Wrangell. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dan Sullivan, Jack. Hello, Jack.
Oh, hello there.
Morning, Jack.
Yeah, okay. It's a rainy day in Wrangell. But my question was about retirements, the retirement funds.
Yes, sir.
I was just wondering what you intend to do about helping that out. I know that they just got $3 billion, but they didn't divide it very evenly, and I just wonder where you stand on that and what we're to look at in the future. I am a recipient of the public employees retirement system.
Well, Jack, I'm glad you asked the question because, you know, one of the other things that I'm running on is a candidate who not only gets things done but fights for his fellow Alaskans. And first of all, thank you for your service with regard to the state of Alaska. When I was your attorney general, there was one of the largest Wall Street financial institutions. We had a lawsuit with regard to them, and I took over that case when I was AG. This was a malpractice suit that they did with regard to our PERS and TERS retirement funds, so your retirement fund that we're talking about. And I pushed this institution very hard in settlements, and we got a settlement of $500 million cash. That was a settlement that I negotiated. That went into the PERS and TERS fund from a financial institution. It was the biggest actuarial malpractice settlement in the country's history. And, you know, I'm proud to have done that to make sure that retirement funds like yours were more fully funded, and that's an example of fighting for my fellow Alaskans that I'm proud of.
Looking forward to the future, of course, you're vying for federal office, and this is a state issue, but, you know, Jack, the question is, what are we going to do?
Well, look, I think one of the most, we got to continue to fight where there's examples of malpractice, and I did that, and
Now, some would say you settled for too little with Mercer, even though you say it was the biggest in the country.
Oh, I disagree with that, Steve. Really? But, you know, everybody has their own opinion. That was one of the largest settlements to come out of the entire financial crisis in terms of Wall Street. And that's cash in the bank, right? Had we gone to trial, who knows what could have happened there. And I think it was a very strong settlement for the state, and I'm proud to have achieved that. Going forward, to me, the most critical thing we need to do for our retirements and our retirement funds is to grow this economy. And again, that's an area where I'm proud to have played a strong role with the governor in terms of getting things done, in terms of we're starting to turn around our TAPS throughput issue, which is so critical, not only to retirement funds, but to the economy with regard to tax reform, permitting, and regulatory reform. We have started seriously to do that in terms of Cook Inlet turnaround. If you remember 3 years ago, we were talking about a dead basin, importing gas from Canada, brownouts here, and now we have a boom that's going on at Cook Inlet from policies of less government, more economic freedom. So to me, one of the most important things we can do to make sure we have strong retirement funds for our teachers and workers is grow this economy more to have the appropriate revenues. And we can do this. I'm very optimistic that we can do this. With regard to the federal level, we got to have a federal government that's a partner in resource development, responsible resource development in Alaska, not an obstacle. And right now, this administration, the Senate Democrats, are almost 100% an obstacle, and that's one of the big reasons I'm running for the U.S. Senate.
Jack and Wrangell, more?
Yeah, I had a little follow-up here on this Mercer thing. You said you got a settlement for $500 million, but actually it was $403 million that the state got out of that, I believe.
So Jack, you're correct. The settlement was $500 million. And what ultimately went into the retirement fund was minus the contingency fee with the law firm that we had. So the state did not fund that. It was funded on a contingency fee basis. And so I think the ultimate number, you're correct, it's in the 410 million.
Jack is watching this one like a hawk.
It's still a very significant number. And as I mentioned, certainly the largest actuarial malpractice settlement by far.
I had another idea on this too. You know, I guess you never mentioned what the loss was. The loss was $8.4 billion. So Mercer and the stock market and the cost of insurance and everything else got off with $8 billion. And none of that I know of. I mean, $403 million is a far cry from $8 billion. And, you know, and you said that was a good deal. If you go back to Washington, D.C., spend money like that and then come up with $500 million out of $8 billion, that's not going to look very good, is it?
Well, you know, I think a lot of what happened with regards to the retirement fund during that time was a combination of the stock market, you know, tumbling during that time, and with regard to what Mercer was responsible for,
they did mess something up pretty bad, though.
What's that?
Mercer made a mistake. There was a basic actuarial mistake in there, as I understand it.
Mercer made a mistake, and we certainly made him pay. As I mentioned, that's a largest actuarial malpractice settlement in the country's history. That was one of the biggest settlements to come out of the entire financial crisis on Wall Street of any financial firms, state or federal charges. So we think it was a very strong settlement, and I'm proud of that settlement.
I don't think an exchange for $400,000 out of $8 billion is a real good settlement, but that's neither here nor there. Also, Mercer was very happy to settle for that amount because they weren't sure of a jury trial in Juneau, and they were the nature of the claims and the amount sought was not that much, is what Mercer had to say about it.
Oh, I completely disagree. Mercer got out of the actuarial business after that. And Jack, when you go to trial, you see it with some of the cases that we've seen here in Alaska that can last for decades before the state ever gets a settlement. They're one of the big, cases that we were looking to rely on. This was not an easy case, and from our perspective, as opposed to having litigation that could have gone either way, and it certainly was no slam dunk that we were going to get even a settlement this large, and then to be appealed for years upon years upon years, which is exactly what would have happened, versus cold hard cash in the retirement accounts of workers who have done their service to Alaska, like you, to me, it was a decision that was strongly in the state of Alaska's interest, and I'm proud to have made that happen.
Well, we keep getting this deal that there's no ad hoc for, you know, for the retirees, so we get the whatever the Anchorage percentage is, which is very little, and usually that's ate up with insurance costs and the rest of it for us, but anyway, do what you can.
Thanks, Jack.
All right, Jack. Thanks for your tough questioning. Dan Sullivan is our guest, and Mark joins the program from out in Bethel. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dan Sullivan, Mark.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Morning, Mark.
As a Marine Corps officer, and by the way, we're looking forward to you coming out and hopefully spending some time campaigning out here in Western Alaska.
I will. I can't wait.
Sure. So, as a Marine Corps officer, how do you balance running against President Obama's policies? On your website, you say, quote, "The President Obama Mark Begich agenda undermines Alaska and America's future," unquote. How do you balance that with the fact that President Obama is your commander-in-chief? And as part of that question, again, as a commanding officer of the Marine Corps, how would you counsel one of your Marines if they were to say that the president, their commander-in-chief, is undermining America's future, or might speak even more disparagingly of him?
Well, it's a great question. And, you know, there's a number of members of Congress who are reserve officers in both parties. And I think that's actually very important to have citizen soldiers serving in the legislature with regard to understanding what the issues are with the U.S. military and having contact and being very focused on leading troops, right? So to me, it's a question that, you know, the broader question of, hey, do you have members of Congress who can still serve in the reserves and do it honorably, but can still be critical of an administration? I think the answer on that is yes. As a matter of fact, I think it's a strong American tradition. With regard to the specific question, you know, as your attorney general, as your DNR commissioner, I served in the I was serving in the Marines during those times, and I was also critical of the Obama administration's policies, whether with regard to federal overreach, whether with regard to shutting down and delaying responsible resource development. And so when I do my training with my Marines, I'm very focused on training my Marines. And but when I am a candidate for office, as other candidates who are reserve officers can do, I am critical of the administration when they have policies that do undermine the future of the country. And I think the policies of this administration have clearly, clearly undermine the future of America and Alaska. And I think the Department of Defense clearly allows reserve officers to make that kind of statement in their capacity as candidates, not in their capacity as commanders.
Okay, so you wouldn't then tolerate any disparagement of the commander-in-chief by your Marines?
I focus on the Obama administration's policies and not personal attacks on, you know, the president or others. And I think that's a longstanding American tradition, and I'm proud to be part of it.
Mark, I want to thank you.
Okay, I didn't quite ask my question, but thanks very much.
Well, yeah, it was a compelling question. I really enjoyed that exchange. Thank you, Dan Sullivan. Thank you very much,
sure,
Mark.
Steve. Thanks,
Bethel,
Mark.
As Talk of Alaska continues.
And I'll see you out in Bethel.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, who believes that success isn't simply having an idea, it is knowing the right lender to help bring it to life. More at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
It's Dan Sullivan running for the U.S. Senate, our guest for this hour of Talk of Alaska. And listeners from all across the state get a chance to talk to the candidate and see what he's made of, what his answers are, and what his positions are, and what he would do. And they're swinging pretty hard there, Dan.
Hey,
kind of
you know,
that.
Look, this is all part of it. I got to tell you, Steve, as I mentioned, it's a great privilege to run for office, and the privilege really is getting out and hearing the hopes and concerns of my fellow Alaskans and doing it all over the state, having people invite you into their homes, into their offices, into their you know, factory floors. And so I love this part of the campaign.
Yeah, it's doing it on the radio is kind of an interesting phenomenon, because generally speaking, you will be best known through the face that the agents who create your advertising choose to present. But in this case, we're actually sitting in people's living rooms.
That's right.
All across the
That's
state
great.
Of Alaska. We're
yeah.
in the room with, they have invited us
and
to
I'll
be
tell
with
you,
them.
That's the, like I said, we've been doing that in people's homes. And that, to me, is the best part of the campaign. Restaurants, like I said last night, American Legion posts, were that kind of interaction is the best part. So,
well, this time we'll go down.
I'm glad I'm in everybody's home.
You are. Let's go down to Sitka, where Carrie's listening to the program. Carrie, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dan Sullivan.
Thank you. Hi, Dan. Thanks
hey,
for
Carrie.
On the line there. I run for office. I know it's a heck of a deal, and I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for running.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to ask you about the campaign stuff. You know, I wanted to ask you two questions. One,
sure.
Do you support the Citizens United Supreme Court decision to make corporations they have the same rights as human beings? And underneath that, allowed the Koch brothers to mount a multi-million dollar campaign against Mark Baggage, and do you support that too?
Well,
in fairness, to answer the second one, he's totally not allowed to say that he did support it if he did.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but no, because independent expenditure and it by law cannot be tied to the candidate. Just to make it clear.
Yeah, no,
but you're
I'm
free
you
to disavow that.
No, I'm not going to disavow anything. But look, one of the things, I'm a very strong believer in the First Amendment. And, you know, the Citizens United case, you know, there's movement now to possibly even change the First Amendment in response to that case. I'm a strong believer in strong protections for the First Amendment. But Carrie, you know, your question raises another issue. It's the issue of outside money from a third party, unlimited third party groups that have unlimited funds from third party expenditures. And you may have seen in the news a couple weeks ago, I proposed a pledge to Mark Baggage to have that money not come into Alaska, to not have that outside money. And that pledge has worked before in other Senate races. And that was a serious pledge from me that would have given other Alaskans the opportunity to air radio and TV ads. Right now, they're almost all being drowned out by this big challenge of the outside expenditures. And within 2 hours, Mark Baggage, who has been decrying this outside spending for years, rejected the offer that I put on the table. He rejected it. And I think it's because he feels he has to have that money to win. His super PAC has funded almost 94% of the money from Harry Reid's Senate Majority PAC. That's where these attack ads are coming from with regard to me, and they've already spent over $2 million attacking me, which was a little bit surprising. But and I'll tell you, one of the attack ads was kind of ironic. It talked about how Dan Sullivan is supported by the Koch brothers. Well, you know, we had previous callers talk about deceitful ads. I've never received a dime from the Koch brothers. I've never met the Koch brothers. The only candidate in this race so far that has gotten money from the Koch brothers is Mark Baggage. A couple years ago, his leadership pack got $5,000 from the Koch brothers. So talk about deceitful advertising. We actually tried to get that pulled because it was so inaccurate. So I'm the one candidate who's out there trying to put forward a plan and taking the leadership to try and prevent this flood of outside spending. And Mark Baggage rejected it within 2 hours. So if there's a candidate who's not doing anything on the outside spending, it's Mark Baggage because he wouldn't sign this pledge. And, you know, when I was asked, why didn't you do that to your other Republican primary candidates? They could sign the pledge if they wanted to, but it's only going to be effective if Mark Baggage signs it. He's the one getting all the money spent for him and, to be honest, spent against him, and it's being spent against me as well, $2 million worth.
Right. Well, I think you're like me. I don't have cable.
You're lucky.
I've never seen any of these things. And
oh, my goodness.
I don't have either.
Well, I'll tell you this.
Gosh,
it's,
you know, it would take all the Republicans to sign the pledge to make it effective, and that's why he didn't sign on.
I think it wouldn't have. That's not the right reason. He could have signed it with me, and it would have been effective. I signed it. I put it forward. As a matter of fact, this pledge worked in the Senate race in Massachusetts 2 years ago. by Elizabeth Warren and Scott Brown. They did it, kept the outside groups from spending. And he had the opportunity to put his money where his mouth is, and he didn't do it. And, you know, that's I think that shows where his true colors are on this issue.
Okay, well, thanks for answering the question.
Thank you.
All right, Carrie, let's go to Mary now. Joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dan Sullivan, Mary.
Hi.
Morning, Mary.
Thank you for taking me a call.
Yes.
So my question is more of an ideological one. I've been following the Republican primary as a pro-life voter, and one sort of big question I have is, Meek Treadwell supports legislation to make abortion illegal and establish a fetus as a person. Do you agree with him, or would you say you don't value life as much as he does?
Well, look, I'm very strongly a pro-life candidate, and that's been a core conviction of mine my whole life. And, you know, I would, I guess I would see the, I guess I'd like to see the legislation that you're referencing. I know that there's, so I before I would answer that, I'd like to see what exactly you're talking about. I know there's legislation that talks about the emphasis of life beginning at conception, which is what I believe. And so, but no, I think that, you know, Mary, to me, one of that's a very important issue. But the other issue that I mentioned early on that is also a very important issue with regard to a big social issue in Alaska that I've been very focused on is the respect for our women and children. And, you know, when I was Attorney General, very early on, when I saw these numbers, these horrible numbers of our high rates of domestic violence and rape, you know, I sat down with the governor very early and, you know, said, boy, we got to do something about this. And I'm very proud, as I mentioned early on, to have spearheaded the Choose Respect campaign, which, you know, a lot of people see that as marches. But that's just not marches. That was public service announcements to let Alaskans know what a huge problem we have, to get it out of the shadows, to dramatically increase penalties for perpetrators of these horrible crimes, to increase victim services. And one of the things I was proud of as Attorney General, I went around and held what we were calling pro bono legal summits to get attorneys to provide legal services free to women who have been abused, which is one of the best ways to prevent a recurrence of domestic violence. And to dramatically increase law enforcement in rural Alaska in particular, where, you know, I think at the beginning of the Parnell administration, we had I think the number was in the 40s in terms of VPSOs and troopers in rural communities. I think we're well over 100 now. And that was something that I worked on with Commissioner Joe Masters and the governor. And so that broader Choose Respect campaign, to me, is a hugely important way to respect life, respect our families, and we need to continue to focus on that, and I certainly will as a U.S. Senator.
Mary, do you feel you got the answer?
Well, I appreciate the answer that you gave, and I agree with you, but I'm still just wondering whether you would personally support legislation that would restrict abortion.
And I think the answer was I would have to see it.
Yeah, see it, but I'm, you know, as I mentioned, my views on I'm a pro-life candidate and a strongly pro-life candidate, and I would, you know, be in favor of policies that promote that very, very important value.
Okay.
Thanks, Mary.
All right, Mary in Anchorage. We'll go down to Sitka again, and Will joins the program. Will, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Dan Sullivan.
Morning, Will.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Sullivan. And first of all, thank you for your service to our country.
I am a former
Vietnam era veteran, and I salute you.
Thank you for your service, especially the Vietnam era veterans. Boy, you guys, I have so much respect for that era because I think when you guys came home, unlike what's happening now, when people thank people for their service, not many Americans were doing that to your generation, and that's horrible. And you guys have really been the guardians of making sure this generation of vets gets treated well, and I can't thank you enough.
Thank you. I am unclear on a couple things. I watched the soundbite commercials that spurred out information on TV, and there's been a lot of ads about you claiming Delaware as a state when you signed up for a fishing license. And that's my first question. I'll make it brief.
Okay, that's great. I love that. Let's say he's ready for that, I think.
Well,
yeah. Okay, let me just tell my other two questions, then I'll stop talking.
Okay,
well. My second question is your campaign affiliated with the Koch brothers? Because that's the feeling we've already
covered that one.
Well, I'll cover it again because
yeah,
it's
I
so
know,
ironic.
I want to get to some other stuff. So okay. Let's stick
and
with
the
fishing license.
Thing,
okay, go ahead. Yeah.
The last thing I'd like to ask you is if you were to become a congressman, how would you reach across the aisle and make a positive impact to start bringing the two parties together like our former generation used to learn how to compromise and bring things together? And how would you find good in what the Obama administration is doing?
Okay, well,
I know that's kind of a large question. But.
Yeah, I'm gonna save that one until after the break, but I will try and get a quick answer on the fishing license thing. Did you really claim Delaware as a state of residence?
No, so here, I mean, look, here's the issue, and Will, thanks for asking. You know, I mean, the residency issue, which certain candidates are raising with me, as I mentioned, I moved to Alaska. I got married here 20 years ago, moved here 17 years ago. The only time I left the state was to serve my country, either as a Marine recalled active duty or working in the Bush administration in a senior position with Condoleezza Rice at the State Department. I lived in a home during that time that I bought. And like a lot of people, I think Mark Begich lives in a home that he bought and Don Young does. And we sold it. And when I came back, I applied for a fishing license. And if you look at the license, it says that if you haven't been in the state, domiciled in the state in the last year, then check this box, which is exactly what I did. So it's pretty straightforward. Look, I mean, what's happening here, Will, is they're trying to focus on small issues, not big issues that are directly facing this country. I want to talk about the big issues, federal overreach, health care, our economy, jobs for the middle class, America's place in the world. These are big issues that what a Senate race should be about. Mark Begich has been voting with Barack Obama 97% of the time. This is not where Alaskans are. He has been supporting an administration that is undermining our economic future in a whole host of ways. Remember, Mark Begich's first vote, if he's reelected, will be to elect Harry Reid as the Senate Majority Leader. That will be his first vote in the U.S. Senate. And if that happens, opportunities such as opening ANWR, developing our resources responsibly, protecting the Second Amendment are going to be gone. And that's why they're focusing on these. With regard to the Koch brothers, as I mentioned, the only candidate in this race right now who's gotten money from the Koch brothers is Mark Begich, and that's a fact.
Dan Sullivan is our guest. It's Talk of Alaska. He, of course, is running for the U.S. Senate. The Republican nomination is Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. If you've served in the military, the Alaska VA welcomes you home and thanks you for your service. We encourage you to enroll for VA health care benefits. Go to 1010ez.med.va.gov to apply online in less than 5 minutes, or print, fax, or mail the two-page form to the VA. You do not need your DD-214 to apply. Call 257-3323 for questions. This message is sponsored by the VA.
It's Talk of Alaska. Dan Sullivan is with us. He's on the campaign trail. He wants to be the senator replacing Mark Begich. And the question that we had just before the break, Dan, was on bipartisanism.
Yeah.
What would you do if you were in the Senate to reach out across the aisle, and I couldn't.
From Will. Yeah.
Yeah, but I can't. I'll have to say you. It wasn't too bipartisan to then start talking about Harry Reid and how damaging that would be.
Well, look, Steve, I believe that, and I think the record of Harry Reid is certainly not favorable to Alaska. But it's a great question, and let me give an example to it. You know, I mentioned to you at the when you talked about three priorities, I do think this over-regulation of our economy and our lives is an issue that cuts across party lines very dramatically. You know, there have been articles in the paper about how it takes, you know, years to permit a bridge now in America. And we've seen many, many examples of how delay and an overregulation mentality from our federal government is harming opportunities. I think there's a great opportunity, great, for bipartisan support to move to an America that promotes opportunity and doesn't overregulate every aspect of our lives. And let me give you an example. You know, when I was DNR commissioner, the governor asked me to serve in that capacity after being attorney general. One of the things that we noted in Alaska was our serious problems with regard to permitting delays and authorizations. You know, DNR, when I took over, had a backlog of permits that was over 2,500 backlog permits, which to me and the governor and many, many others was undermining opportunity, really choking our private sector. And we put forward a bipartisan plan, comprehensive plan to make our permitting system more efficient, timely, certain, bring down this backlog of permits. And that was an example of working with the Senate and House here in the Alaska legislature. At the time, that was during the bipartisan coalition days, so you had to get strong Democratic support. And we made huge progress on this issue because so many Alaskans, Democrats and Republicans, saw that a permitting system that undermines opportunity is not good for our citizens. And I think the country would be certainly ready for something like that on a bipartisan basis. And I would be one of the leaders to focus on that.
So the answer would be that federal overreach is a bipartisan issue. It cuts across the party lines.
Certainly is.
We have a couple of questions about federal budget coming in online.
Sure.
And I guess I'll do this one. If you want a balanced budget and you don't want to reduce veterans' benefits, would you be willing to rescind the tax cuts of the Bush years?
So my focus on the budget, and it's one of the biggest areas that I've been focused on, when I talk about the country going in the wrong direction, you have federal overreach, you have an economy that can't grow. But one of the things that I think has become almost a moral issue, $17 trillion of debt that we face as a country right now. And it's an incredible number when you think about it. That is going to be on my children's backs, our grandchildren's backs, if we don't get focused on it. To me, the most important way that we have to be able to do that, to deal with that, Steve, is growing our economy. You know, the last quarter, the U.S. economy actually shrunk almost by 3%. We have to grow this economy back at traditional American levels of growth, 3.5%, 4%, 4.5% GDP growth. If we can do that, and I think we can do it through less government, more freedom, taking advantage of these huge opportunities with resource and energy development, that's the best way to shrink our economy or to shrink our budget deficit. I want to grow the economy. I am not in favor of increasing taxes. I think that we're taxed too much. And I also think that we need to be very smart and focused on cutting government spending. There's huge amounts of waste, even in the part of the government that I'm familiar with. I think there's a huge amounts of waste in the military. But to me, the key with regard to getting our budget deficit under control is growing the economy. I saw a statistic recently that said if we froze spending and grew at about 4% GDP growth, we could get rid of our budget deficit inside of a decade. And I think that's the focus. We got to grow this economy and provide opportunities for Alaskans and Americans.
One more question for sure. Dan Sullivan from Chris in Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Chris.
Hello there. Thank you.
Morning, Chris.
Good morning. You know, I was really glad to hear what you just said about being tired of the overregulation of our lives out of Washington. In 1998, Alaskans passed a constitutional amendment restricting the rights of LGBT Alaskans to actually grasp this fundamental right of marriage. And there is now a lawsuit called Hamby versus Alaska suing the state because they believe, and a lot of us believe, that that initiative, that constitutional amendment, is a blatant violation of our civil rights under the 14th Amendment. There have been 22 rulings in a row, unanimously across the courts of this nation, conservative, progressive courts, all of them saying that marriage is a fundamental right, that this is a violation of individual liberties, and that these constitutional amendments and laws can't stand. I would like to hear what your perspective is on this emerging consensus.
You got about a minute there, Dan Sullivan.
Okay, thanks, Chris. You know, I support what the Alaska citizens did in 1998 with regard to the Constitution, our state constitution. And to me, it's an issue that a lot of people are focusing on. But I think it's a broader issue with regard to the issue of federalism. You know, in Congress now, you have a number of people who have changed their position on the gay marriage issue, including the president. And now he's saying, well, I've changed my position, so the rest of the country should change their position. What I think is important is letting the states and the citizens of the states decide this. Not the Congress, not the federal courts, but Alaskans and other citizens in their states. And, you know, that's the way our Constitution was designed. And there's conversations that are going on about this issue throughout the state at dinner tables and throughout the state. But to me, it should be decided by the Alaskan people, not the courts, and certainly not the Congress. I think what we did in 1998 is where that decision-making should be.
So you would push it all the way to the Supreme Court. But, of course, it's not a Senate matter, really.
No, but I think the broader issue of not having the federal government try to decide every important issue in our lives is a Senate issue. It's a federal issue.
All right. Thank you, Dan Sullivan.
Hey, Steve, it was great to be here. I look forward to being on again anytime, and thanks for your great service to the state.
Thank you very much. Joe Miller's next. Thanks to Josh Edge, Dave Waldron, and Sean Carpenter. Hard work, you guys. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with 3 offices, 2 in Anchorage and 1 in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. And by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.